Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classroom into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share some of my stories, some strategies and tips and tools, blueprints, resources. I often share the mistakes I've made along the way, all with the hope of leaving you with something that you could actually use in your classroom. Today, we're going to be talking about the relationship between trust and feedback. And I think this is really important for project-based learning and design thinking. If you are doing a design thinking project and you're having students work collaboratively, if you're doing any kind of project and you have kids in groups and they're going to work interdependently, chances are they're going to need to give each other feedback. And that can be really, really tricky. So that's what I want to get into today. But first, I want to share a story of a time that a colleague of mine, actually a really good friend, gave me some feedback on my teaching practice. So here's the deal. It was my fifth year of teaching when I invited a colleague, Javier, to observe a lesson. Now, the word colleague here doesn't quite describe it. Javi and I ran a project-based service learning program together. We were good friends. We had developed unit plans together and a full tech-integrated curriculum. And so we were really close friends. We trusted each other. We still do. Each week, we would geek out on our craft over a pint at a local craft brew pub. I trusted his expertise. This guy was a phenomenal teacher, and he trusted me as well. So when I invited him in to observe a lesson, I welcomed his feedback. Well, or so I thought. I actually didn't. See, I had created this simulation activity for a key concept in social studies. It had to do with the Industrial Revolution. And from my perspective, nearly every student was fully engaged in the lesson. Classroom management was seamless on this particular day. Students shared deep and profound answers when we did our debrief. But then when I met with Javi at lunchtime, his feedback kind of surprised me. "What did you think of the lesson?" I asked. "It was pretty good," he answered. "Not amazing, not spectacular, not, hey, John, that was one of the best lessons I've ever seen you teach, just pretty good." I looked at him. "What do you mean by pretty good?" "Oh, the core of it was solid, but you talked way too much at the end." "We had a discussion as a class." He then explained how I had paraphrased every single answer that students had given to me. In a true discussion, you could draw a line between each person and you would see this interconnected web. But if you were to diagram it out, what you would see with me was a spoke in a wheel. Every single answer came back to me first, it was paraphrased, and then I would call on someone else. Plus, he pointed out, I hadn't done any pair-share activities to ensure that students processed the information first before we talked about it as a group. Moreover, the activity itself didn't include the typical sentence stems or front-loaded vocabulary I did on a regular basis to ensure that my ELL students could access the content. He ended with this statement, "John, if your students were extroverted native English speakers, then the lesson was great, but it didn't work for all your students." Now, I'd love to say that I smiled and took the criticism well, but actually, I got defensive. I rationalized away the point of the pair-share activity, but at some point, it sunk in. I had failed to create a truly inclusive lesson. As much as I cared about equity, I had marginalized my ELL students, and I couldn't even see that I was doing it. Furthermore, even though I am an introvert, I had failed to create introspective processing time for my students. Now, even though I trusted Javi as a friend and an expert teacher, I was still in this moment unable to listen to his feedback. And so for the rest of those 23 minutes we had to scarf down a meal, we talked about other stuff. I changed the subject to The Office, and eventually we moved on to the 49ers, and at the time they were actually a decent football team. And then I went back to my classroom when lunch ended, and I taught the same lesson to the next group. But this time, I noticed that my ELL students were struggling. Javi was right. My introverted students were overwhelmed, and some of them were already beginning to check out. Some of the louder students were dominating the discussions, and for the most part, the boys were talking over the girls. I began to make modifications on the fly, writing out sentence frames and creating short think-pair-share moments, and I began to be more selective about who I called on. And really, when we did the debrief in the end, I changed from the spoken wheel concept to more of a web. Now, for me, this is a reminder that we all need critical feedback. There's this thing, and you probably remember it from like freshman year intro to psychology class, but it was called the Johari window. And there's these different areas of what you know, what's seen to others, what others see that you don't see, what others see and you see, and then what others see and you also don't know about yourself. And I think that when we seek out positive and negative feedback, when we honestly ask people to share what they're seeing, it opens that window even bigger for us. We become much more aware. Now, some of the things, again, are inherently positive. Others see gifts and talents that your own insecurities make you unable to see. But other times, there are character flaws and biases and negative behaviors that you just don't notice about yourself. And if we're willing to grow, we need feedback in this area so that we can become more self-aware and do the hard work of self-improvement. In the last few years, I've had a co-teacher who's given me critical feedback. She's shared how to tighten up lessons, how to make things more efficient. And there have been moments where, same thing, I've gotten defensive. I can be kind of thin-skinned. But I've become a better teacher because of the feedback that Keelan has given me. I've had blog readers that offer pushback on ideas that ultimately led to deeper nuance in what I believe. I had a workshop attendee offer some really critical feedback that helped me address issues of race and inequality and inequity in this whole idea of the maze versus ladder that I share sometimes in my workshops. And all of these moments have led to deeper learning and growth, even when they felt, well, kind of unpleasant in the moment. So I want to talk about what this means for students. But first, I want to get into the types of feedback, because you'll probably notice that some of this feedback is more personal, some feels less personal. So I want to make a little bit of a distinction here. Peer feedback is critical to collaborative work. We know this. If students are using project-based learning, they need peer feedback in their group dynamics and in the products they are creating. Now, when we think of feedback, there's a couple of categories that we might want to think of. The first is your character. This is the feedback that cuts to the core of who you are. It includes elements of identity and beliefs and values and behaviors. And then you have actions. These are the concrete behaviors that your peers have observed. They might include things like your communication style, your interactions with others, specific things that you've done in the midst of a project. And then you have your ideas. And here I'm thinking less about the convictions or beliefs you have. Those are more about your character and more about the specific ideas you have regarding the processes that you're using in a project or the product of what you're going to create in your collaborative project. And then finally, you just have the actual creative work. This is the specific things that you're doing in a project, the stuff that you're making. Now, know that there's a lot of overlap in these categories. For example, if you're brainstorming, you might have peers offer feedback on your actions, like are you interrupting each other, your character, are you being empathetic, and the ideas that you're sharing, are these good ideas or not? And the ideas and work seem to blend together often. And yet, it's still really important that we make the distinction between what type of feedback we're receiving. In the case that I mentioned before with Javi, I didn't receive his feedback well because I viewed it as an attack on my character when really it was a critique of my work. In this case, the way I had designed my lessons. Javi knew me. He knew me well. He knew who I was as a person, and he knew that I valued equity and diversity. But he also knew that I had moments where biases crept in. And because we trusted each other, he was able to give me that feedback. And that's what I want to get into next, is this role of trust within the feedback. Now, we live in a world full of unsolicited feedback. Whether it's a snarky comment from a troll on YouTube or someone honking their horn at you when you're driving, you get it. There's lots of unsolicited feedback. And incidentally, I learned a while ago that there's a huge difference between when people honk their horns in the East Coast and the West Coast. In the West Coast, if I honk my horn at you, I'm either really enraged or more likely I'm warning you that you're about to die. But in the East Coast, they just use their horns all the time. I think it's how they say hi. Anyway, back to this. Feedback is sometimes downright toxic. Sometimes it's just misinformed, but not toxic. And sometimes, though, it is exactly what you need in order to grow. Now, this, by the way, is why we need to think about trust and its role in feedback. If we go back to the somewhat arbitrary categories I mentioned above, certain types of feedbacks seem to require more trust. I pay close attention to what strangers have to say about my creative work. I regularly analyze workshop feedback, read blog comments, look at the reviews on Goodreads and Amazon on my books. I'm not going to ignore that feedback. I want to know, is what I'm creating actually reaching people? Same thing with this podcast. I look at the reviews on iTunes and Stitcher. It matters to me. On the other hand, I rarely seek out feedback from strangers regarding my character. Instead, I value what my wife has to say, what my family has to say, my close friends and colleagues, my students. Here, trust is much more important. Now, if we look at it, you can sort of create a spectrum or a continuum between what requires less trust. So if you can imagine this on the left, there's less trust and then more trust on the right. And so, you know, beginning with less trust, you have creative work, and then you require a little more trust as you move into your ideas. And then as you move into your actions, that requires even more trust. And then character, that requires a lot more trust. So really, we're not going to choose to trust someone that we don't know or whose expertise we don't respect. I mean, we are not going to ask people who are complete strangers to, you know, make comments on our character. Now, a quick note on trust. Sometimes trust is relational. I trust my wife because of our love and intimacy and shared vulnerability that we have together. And besides, I just am crazy about her 15 years in the marriage, and she still is the most beautiful woman I've ever seen. Anyway, there's no one I trust more relationally than my wife. Often when we seek out and listen to feedback on character issues, we have to choose people we trust on a relational level. However, sometimes trust is more about expertise. When a stranger critiques a workshop that I do, I'm going to listen to her because of her lived experience and her expertise on the issues that she's bringing up. When she, for example, talked to me about equity issues, I knew she was steeped in this work, and I valued the feedback that she had to offer. There are times when people you love and trust might give you feedback, say, on your creative work, and you might not listen to them because they're not experts on that particular creative area. Think about, for example, a parent who doesn't understand your artwork. But then you might listen to the feedback from an expert, a fellow artist or a fellow art teacher who's saying, hey, this work that you have is fantastic. So as we think about students in PBL units, I think it's important that we focus our initial feedback more on the work and ideas, and then as trust develops, they can begin to provide critical feedback on actions and group dynamics, and then only in situations where there's true deep relational trust can you get into those, you know, providing feedback on character issues. Now, I want to share something with you that I developed for students, and it's called the trust feedback grid. Now, this is what it looks like. I want you to imagine, again, the low trust to high trust continuum, maybe, you know, going horizontally, and then vertically, you have another continuum going from negative to positive, and this is for feedback. So again, one thing that's low to high trust, and then one that is negative to positive feedback, and it then creates four grids. So if you can imagine that right now. All right, so if you've got that in your head, now I want you to think about this. When you have low trust but positive feedback, you end up with flattery. Now, this feels great, but it's potentially toxic and often very manipulative. Flattery would be sort of overly gushing praise that's insincere. Now, when there's distrust, so low trust and negative feedback, you have hating. And the haters are going to hate. That's right. I just quoted Taylor Swift. Now, when you move over to the positive side in trust, you can have high trust and negative feedback. And this is critical feedback. Now, critical feedback doesn't feel good. It's not fun, but it's absolutely vital for growth. And then you have high trust, right? So you really trust the person, and positive feedback. And this is where you get affirmation. And these words of affirmation are vital for our lives. These are the words that can pull you out of a rut and who can, they're the words that help you believe in yourself when you don't believe in yourself, right? They pull you into a place where you say, I actually can do this. And I know we're supposed to be intrinsically motivated. I know we're supposed to have growth mindset, but we need affirmation in our lives in order to move forward and to grow. So I've shared this particular grid with my students. And the main reason why is that, you know, for all the talk about middle schoolers being, you know, mean to each other and bullying and this and that, I found that often they really struggle to give critical feedback. It feels like being mean. And to be honest, there are times when that's been the case for my college students. They have a hard time giving negative feedback too, or critical feedback. And so the goal is to get them to see that if there's trust there, then critical feedback is vital and affirmation is vital as well. Now, if you're going to think about trust, one strategy that I would recommend is that you do a pulse check for trust. I love doing little surveys at the end of the class period, make it like an exit slip. And there's questions like, on a scale of 1 to 5, how well does your group trust each other? On a scale of 1 to 5, how well do you trust your group members to complete tasks? Do you feel that you can speak freely and share ideas with your group? And so the idea is to deconstruct trust and then create questions that allow students to share whether or not they truly feel that they can trust the members in their group. And this should be anonymous. It should not be shared with groups. It's for you to get a pulse check. Now, I want to end with something even more practical, and it's the strategies and structures for peer feedback. There's some specific things that I found to be really helpful for peer feedback, and it guides them and helps facilitate the feedback. The first one is the 20-minute peer feedback system. This is where students pitch an idea, they ask clarifying questions, they give feedback, they come up with next steps. There's a video on this blog post that goes with it. And then this is also part of the assessment toolkit. If you want to download it on this blog post, you can download that as well. Another one that I love is giving structured feedback with sentence frames or sentence stems. It helps guide students through diagnostic, clarifying, and critical feedback. Another one is just a simple 3-2-1 structures. Students provide three strengths, two areas of improvement, or maybe two things to consider if you want to phrase it differently. And then one question that they have. Another one is feedback carousel. This is where groups get sticky notes and they leave anonymous comments for other groups. Another one is peer coaching. This is a little more detailed. There are questions that I've developed for student-teacher conferencing, and they can be adapted for peer coaching or peer conversations as well. And then the mastermind structure. I did a podcast and blog post about the mastermind structure before, and I found this to be really helpful. Ultimately, peer feedback is all about trust. However, when students provide that meaningful peer feedback to one another, it actually builds deeper trust that then leads to better feedback and more trust in this ongoing cycle, this reciprocal relationship. So if you're interested in this, again, you might want to check out the toolkit. It's something that is free. There's a lot of resources in it, and who knows, it's something that you might find helpful. Thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher? That would mean the world to me. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.